from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you for the next 4 hours today. I've got the Chris Thomas shift today, as he was someone very much vocal on this radio station this week. I saw the schedule and I was like, man, all right, Chris doing some overtime work this week. So I get slide up into the 2-6 spot today. Get to actually be on. Not during a Braves game. It feels like that's been a thing as of late for my show, is I'm on, like, trying to keep up with the game, also trying to talk of a host of different things over the course of my show. Today, don't have that conflict of the schedule, so we'll get into plenty of Braves talk throughout the show. Actually, I'm very excited for later in this hour, just to start at 2:40, I'm going to have Scott Coleman of Hammer Territory podcast, excuse me. Scott Coleman, a great group of those guys who put together kind of this new podcast as part of a new kind of like podcast network that's going on to cover the Atlanta Braves. And those guys at Hammer Territory, I'm going to get it right at some point, do a really good job. And you just are very in-depth in their discussions, much like our own Grant McCauley, of course. But Grant, you know, he's such a busy man. Like, can't have him on every day. And so Scott, a guy that I like to turn to for additional Braves coverage, is going to have him on the Dopey Millennial Show coming up at 2. Later in the show, we're going to have actually Scott's co-host partner at times on Hammer Territory, but Brad Rowland, also the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, just incredibly in-depth coverage of the Atlanta Hawks, and a guy who I consider to be a close personal friend, someone who is usually standing next to me at press conferences, as he was on Monday when we talked with Hawks general manager Landry Fields. Going to have some audio from that conversation on Monday later in the show, but also going to talk with Brad Rowland, like I said, host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, coming up at 3:40. And then in the 4:40 slot, going to have an old buddy of the station here, a guy who has gone on to do great things on the Locked On network as well. Jarvis Davis is going to stop by the show at 4:40 to talk some Falcons. We learned about some new inductees to the Falcons Ring of Honor. That's also going to be something that we discuss later in the show about those two new members to the Falcons Ring of Honor, as well as I'm going to be asking you all in the I think it's the second hour of the show, who you believe should go next. Who's number 15? I think it's pretty clear. I think it's pretty obvious, but it's something that we're certainly going to discuss later on in the show. However, right off the bat, to start things off, I want to talk about something and an exciting moment in the city of Atlanta last night. An incredibly exciting moment that maybe didn't play out ideally how we would have liked to have seen it, but exciting nonetheless. Something that I'm very curious to see if there is a continued growth, if there is a continued interest, or if we're dealing with spectacle in that the circus is in town, and so I'm going to go pop in and see. Last night, not only here on our station on 92.9 The Game, but at State Farm Arena, we had the Atlanta Dream hosting the Indiana Fever. Now, why was that a big deal? Well, you'd think, you know, there were some number one overall picks involved in this game. Not all of them that we would have liked to have seen, as Ryan Howard for the Atlanta Dream was out. Is just, quite honestly, the worst timing. The worst timing for Ryan Howard to step on someone's foot in that Minnesota game, turn her ankle, and now she's on like a boot and a little scooter thing riding around. And you have to wonder if this affects Ryan Howard's ability to compete in the Olympic 3-on-3 competition. As we just saw Cameron Brink of the LA Sparks go down this past week, and that was extremely unfortunate. And then Ryan Howard following it up this week. Hopefully that is not an extensive injury. Hopefully we're dealing with, I don't know, I mean, dealing with an ankle sprain like that, maybe a month. I don't know if I'm too optimistic there, but that certainly runs into the timeline of the Olympics, and you have to wonder if that's just going to put her out of all of this. However, I want to bring in my producer, at least for the first hour of the show, as Noel is sticking around and filling in for Eric Slaughter, who's coming up a little later on, who's on the scene doing some other exciting things for WAOK. But Noel, you are our 92.9 The Game Atlanta Dream reporter. So first off, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
As well as, yeah, what'd you see of what was obviously a historic game from a record-breaking perspective? Is there was 17,575 fans at State Farm Arena last night, which blew out the record of the inaugural Atlanta Dream game, who had the highest attendance of 11,609. So a record-breaking attendance game. But as far as, and this is going to be something, Noel, that I want you to hold me to, and I want you to hold other people on this station who talk about the Dream, let's make sure we talk the basketball.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we talk the basketball, because I know a lot of big picture things to discuss. Obviously, Caitlin Clark gets a lot of attention, rightfully so, and all of those sorts of things. But what I want to spend the rest of our time here, and what I want to do on a more regular basis when we talk the WNBAs, let's make sure we're actually talking the actual basketball. So what did you see out there last night?
Well, I saw two teams that wanted to play a high-low game, and one was more successful than the other. What can I say? I got the opportunity to talk to Caitlin Clark before the game. I asked her what she's seeing on the court that's improving her assist numbers, and everything she told me was what I saw on the court in those 2 hours of basketball yesterday.
Which was?
They're getting out in transition. She's seeing better in transition. She's getting the balls down to the bigs. The bigs are running the floor harder. And they kind of put Atlanta in that trap yesterday where they were just able to run out on fast breaks, and they couldn't really, like, you could tell that Coach Wright wanted to play through Tina Charles, and we did that. And I mean, Tina Charles is going to do what Tina Charles does.
Yeah,
and she did that. Yeah. But we needed more. Like, so the in and out game was clearly like Charles and Gray, right? Mm-hmm. Alicia Gray, big leash. I mean, Big Leash did a thing. She does what she does. She's gonna go inside. She's gonna shoot outside. She's gonna give you some lockdown defense if she's really, really focused. We've seen that this season. And I felt like she gave you all those things yesterday. I just felt like they were a little slow in the mud. It really, really hurt not having Ryan.
Yeah.
When she turned her ankle in Minnesota, I was hoping that she was going to get up and walk off like she did when it happened in Atlanta the week before. When it happened at Gateway Center, she kind of laid down for a second and got up, got herself together, walked back to the bench, went in a little later. But this one, it was clear she was going to be out for a while. And they felt it last night. You had three players that didn't score at all yesterday. That wasn't great. One starter that didn't score. Cheyenne Parkatayas. Hey, Miss Parkatayas. 9 minutes, 5 points. It wasn't a good flow. And we've seen them play with a good flow and a good offense. Like, I think they had a great game plan going against the Chicago Sky because you had two young front court players versus two older front court players. That was easy domination. Kind of the same thing with the Sparks. I think it was easy for Tina. Yeah. It was easier to play through Tina Charles because you just had to beat up on Cam, who's not really ready to play a Tina Charles yet. Like, Cam was great, but you're not really ready to play a vet like a Tina Charles yet. But Aaliyah Boston is ready to go. Now Lisa Smith is ready to go. Caitlin Clark is starting to figure it out. You can tell.
It also helps.
The point guard is starting to figure out how to get the ball to Caitlin, too.
Yeah, it also helps when the opposing defense just kind of
doesn't exist.
Yeah, lets you on those fast breaks and things like that. When the defense is kind of like, oh, well, Caitlin, why don't you have this layup right here?
Yeah, there were screens that they couldn't keep up with. Because, like, watching Caitlin come off the screen and just, like, get the ball and catch and shoot, like, no dribble, no nothing. It's nasty to see, especially when you're on the other side of it. It seemed like every time I looked up, it was like, ooh, plus three. So, and it's not just her. They're a good three-pointing shooting team if you're not going to guard the perimeter or if they can get you moving on the fast break. And they did. I mean.
I also find it interesting from a Fever perspective of the amount of games they played at the beginning of the season. Their schedule so compacted. And every game on national TV and game, because it was all about like,
Caitlin Clark, get as much out of them as possible.
Yeah, and we were seeing Caitlin and this team just in general struggle to find an identity, struggle to shoot, all of the things that is going to happen with a young team. I found it very interesting that as of late, as their schedules have become more normal and other teams are starting to catch up to them as far as number of games played, that, oh, shocker, you mean a team that gets to practice more and gets to play not as many games in the same week all of a sudden starts looking better, I think is a huge part of this. Also, it cannot be understated that Atlanta's offense statistically worst in the league.
You want to know why? You want to know why it's the worst in the league, Caleb? Because they don't move without the ball.
Yeah.
When they move without the ball, they actually look really good. When they move without the ball, Ryan and Alicia and Ariel Powers off the bench, like, they look so much better when there's constant moving off the ball. But this especially happens when Crystal Dangerfield comes in as the point guard, right? So I noticed that they run this set where Crystal will bring the ball up. She either goes left or right. She's going to hand the ball off to whoever coming off the screen left or right and then just stand in the corner. And she stands in the corner the entire play. And I'm like, there has to be a better set than this. This isn't what it never works. Whenever they do it, it doesn't work. I don't know why they continue. I don't know why they continue that strategy.
And Coach,
I don't know.
And Coach Wright comes to the podium last night looking like she was ready to pull her hair out because that's one thing that I've talked with a few friends and I think. And look, this goes back. I mean, the W has been doing this as far as I know. I was covering games in 2017 for the Dream, and having the head coach and top two players or whoever they picked for that game sit next to each other, answering questions, or as coach gives an opening statement, brings a different level of like awkwardness to things.
Yeah,
because it's like, ooh, I mean, she pulled no punches in her opening statement.
And she never does, to be honest. That's the one thing I do like about Coach Wright. It's clear that she's still trying to figure it out. I don't necessarily like all of her choices. But before she can even really sit down and get to the microphone, the first words out of her mouth was, I don't have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's my job to find the answers, But I don't have them right now. If I had them, I wish I could tell you. And I think bringing Tina Charles up there with her, because she usually brings Tina with her, I think that kind of relieves some of the awkwardness, because sure. Tina kind of knows what that conversation is going to be.
She's been there before, yeah.
But definitely, I definitely know what you mean, because it's almost like, you know, coach is staring at you, like, pick it up.
Yeah.
Like when you're sitting right there. Well, and especially somebody as intense as Tanisha.
That's the thing. Because
Tanisha is intense, man.
Yes.
Like, when I ask her a question, it's like she bores into my soul. I asked her the other day about Ryan. Like, it was the game against the Sparks. I was like, okay. You know, Ryan didn't have a great first half. You know, she got injured. She picked it up in the second half. She ended the game, I think, with like 16 points. I was like, what was it like for you seeing Ryan fight through adversity? And that was the longest answer she gave in that presser. And she looked me directly in my eyes the entire time as she was saying, you know, a player like Ryan, you know, it's only year three. She's just starting her third year, and they have to get their feet under them, and it's going to take some years for them. I felt like she was, like, delivering that message to me personally. So, Coach Wright, I 100% agree with you. I understand. But, yeah, I think the girls will figure it out. They're still my girls. I love watching them, but I love watching them more when they move without the ball.
Yeah, you're just not going to win a game in which the Fever shoot 57% from the field, 52% from three-point. Meanwhile, the Dream last night, 34% from the field, 22% from three-point.
And that's what their losses look like. I felt like the loss against the Liberty was the same. I felt like the loss against the Sun was very similar. But at least those were like upper echelon teams of your division, right? Like the Fever, you came in here as below you, and now, you know, other teams are starting to get an. I mean, you gave the Mystics their first win. We got some problems. We got to hit the alarm.
It was rough. The bigger picture here is we get ready to head into the break, and when we get back, I know we're going to talk all of the headlines of the week, but the big picture of last night, too, that I think cannot be understated enough when it comes to the national conversation and you know, whether it's the All-Star game, whether it's the Olympic team, whatever, of Caitlin Clark is, yes, you saw the really good of Caitlin Clark as she got going early and she knocked down some threes. However, 7 turnovers. She's averaging 5.6 turnovers a game. That leads the league. She is number numero uno in the WNBA of turnovers, and that matters when you're trying to build an Olympic team, when you're talking about greats of the game. So she's getting there. Let's little hold the brakes on such some of the conversation, and let's actually watch the games. I was it's just a really incredibly exciting moment last night. Of I had the W on my phone watching the Dream and the Fever. I had Apple TV on watching the Braves, and then later got into some hockey going on. It's all gonna come up next on the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you going until 6 p.m. today. Like I said, got the whole 4-hour show going on. You know, Noel, the other thing that I meant to mention in that first segment about the Atlanta Dream game last night down at State Farm Arena, a record-breaking night. They had nearly 18,000 fans in the building, as someone made the joke. Was not me. Someone did make the joke of, like, man, haven't seen State Farm that full in quite some time.
I'm not going to lie to you. Even I said, I was like, hey, they might sell better than the Hawks.
They, for a game.
I mean, you know, for it's a very, very small sample size.
Yeah.
Very, very small. It was just impressive that it looked like a playoff game last night. It really did.
It did. The other part of it, though, that I talked to a few of my friends about this. The court that they had down looked so official.
It looked so good.
I was like, can y'all take that down to College Park? Because that looks better than the one you've been playing on.
It looks so good, didn't it? And then we had 2 mascots last night.
Yeah.
The fan experience was great last night. I will say that.
Had everything, even had a big Tigger performance at halftime.
Man, like, we even got to have a little Kennesaw's.
Yeah.
Are we locked in? Are you my friend?
Oh, man, it was good. All right, I want to, with the time that we've got, get into all the headlines of the day and of the week with the rest of the story.
Now, the rest of the story.
All right, we're going to begin with the Atlanta Braves. Man, it is so nice to get on these airwaves and to talk about the Braves winning baseball. Like, to come on this show, which I have not been able to do in over a month, and talk about some positive things. Like, what I have been doing is, all right, let's not panic. That wasn't good. All right, that wasn't great. Okay, another injury. All right, you just, like, I feel many of us are those, like, sitting in a boat, and it's, like, one hole, and you plug it with your hand. The other hole, you plug it with your hand. Now we're playing Twister with our feet and our head, and we're just trying to plug all of the holes. And it feels like momentarily that maybe we've found some tools in the boat and things are starting to be plugged and held onto, at least for the moment. As last night, the Braves dominate the Yankees 8-1 in New York for their fourth straight win. And the Braves have now won 7 of their last 8 games. As I mentioned earlier, coming up in about 14 minutes from now, we're going to have Scott Coleman of the Hammer Territory podcast on to get his thoughts on can we say the whole they're back? Like, are we able to do that yet? I don't know. It feels a little bit premature as of yet. We've seen a week of really great baseball. Like I said, 7 of their last 8 have been wins for the Braves. 4 straight win last night going up to New York. And just absolutely pummeling Carlos Rodon as Ozzie Albies and Austin Riley. They homered off Rodon in the first. I'll be honest with you. I got to this game late. Like, I was doing other things in my house, trying to walk the dog, get dinner, and catch up on a few other things. And so I just, as I got my, you know, Apple TV app opened, I see, oh, wow, all right, we've already got a 3-0 game, and we're just settling in here. It was a great feeling, much different than those who, you remember that Mike Foltynewicz playoff game where some people were late to the game, and they were like, oh, this thing's already over, and we can just go home now. It certainly didn't feel like that, but just the momentum swing heavily in the Braves' favor to start off this game. As I mentioned, Austin Riley and Ozzie Albies homer in the first. Then Matt Olson goes long in the fourth. Meanwhile, Chris Sale on the mound. It's funny. I tweeted out and I had some people push back against me. And I was like, all right, I got to explain myself. I was like, huh, kind of disappointed in Chris Sale. Not because he had a bad start, because last night Sale goes 5 innings, gives up 1 hit, 1 earned run, 3 walks, not ideal, but 8 strikeouts. But the important part is just the 1 earned run. Now, if you've looked at Chris Sale starts honestly, all season long, like he had, I think, a pretty short start to start off the, or not short, it was like 5 innings, I think, to start off the year. But he's kind of done this whole thing where he pitches 3 straight games of like 7 innings, and then he'll have a down start of like a 4 inning start, or he'll pitch another 3 straight games of going 7 innings, and then he'll have like a 5 inning start. So we were on right now 2 straight of him going 7 innings, Chris Sale. So last night I was like, all right, let's keep this thing going and have a 3rd straight of going 7. He was only able to go 5, but it was a very solid 5 innings from Chris Sale, who just kind of lost his command there in that final inning. And he did enough, though, to get the Braves into it. I cannot say enough good things about Grant Holmes, a guy who, what an incredible story, 10 years in the minor leagues, finally gets called up. And so far, over his 3 appearances, Grant Holmes has pitched 5 innings. He's given up 3 hits, no runs, and no walks. I mean, that is about as ideal for a reliever as you could ask for. Now, I get it, low leverage situations and all of those sorts of things, but given that Grant was kind of joining this pitching staff as a whole at a point when every young guy, and I guess I can't really call him young, but every new guy that the Braves were throwing out there, it was just like, all right, a little bit of good and then a little bit of ugly. At a point that we were dealing with that, to have Grant Holmes show up on the scene and to look as good as he has, it's been really exciting thing to see. And it's also something I'm going to ask Scott Coleman about this, like I said, coming up next about 10 minutes from now. If Grant Holmes' role on this, reliever staff, if it continues to grow, or if the success is maybe connected to the fact that he's been in some pretty low leverage types of situations. All right, continuing in the rest of the story where we hit all of the headlines and let you know what is the rest of the story to those things. Shout out to the great legend Paul Harvey. Atlanta United prepares for St. Louis City SC tonight. The five-stripe countdown begins at 7:30 with Garrett Chapman and Abe Gordon. This is going to be the first time that Atlanta and St. Louis play each other, because St. Louis was an expansion team last year, and I remember talking to Jason Longshore throughout last season and being like, Jason, all right, this new expansion club is, like, really good out of nowhere. I mean, they won a league record 17 wins last season. That's the most for an expansion club ever. And they won the Western Conference in MLS last year. First year on the scene, just incredible. This year, not as great. It feels like they've kind of come back down to earth. And maybe some of those things that they were experiencing last year, a bit of luck, shall we say. But yeah, going to be interesting to see Atlanta take on St. Louis tonight in St. Louis for a, like I said, 7:30 pregame with the five-stripe countdown, 8:30 kickoff between those two. There's going to be no Thiago Almada in this one, which is really going to hurt Atlanta, as he was the lone goal scorer against DC on Wednesday. And I feel like I have to offer a correction. Yesterday during my sports flashes, the entire day, I said Atlanta coming off a win over Houston on Wednesday, because my brain was thinking that's the last team that they had faced up until Wednesday when they beat DC United. So I'm going to offer that correction. My apologies. And I was kind of surprised, like, no one caught me on that mistake. You know, Noel, what happens a ton of times is I'll do a sports flash and I'll get a DM on Twitter or DM on Instagram of some longtime listener who will hit me up and be like, hey, Caleb, made a mistake there. And I'm like, whoops, my bad. All right, I'll go correct it. But I went the whole day. And then it hit me as I was preparing for this show last night that I was like, wait, they played Houston last Saturday. It was DC on Wednesday. But a really a much-needed win for Atlanta United on Wednesday that got them 3 points after that insane screamer of a goal from Thiago Almada. But like I said, Thiago unavailable tonight for the Five Stripes with that yellow card accumulation. It's also the third match in 8 days for Atlanta United. They're going to be going for their third straight road win. So some positive things going on there. But I have to wonder what the lineup is going to look like, just given that no Thiago Almada, no Gregerson with that hamstring injury. I think he's questionable, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to play. No Edwin Mosquera out with a knee injury. Saba Lobajanidze, Bartosz Lis, Luis Abram all on international duty. So with so many different players out of this one, does Rob Valentino go young and say, like, hey, let's get some youth out there. Let's not, not tanking or trying to lose anything the stretch of the imagination, but just dealing with a very busy schedule that maybe you recognize that and see what you can do against a St. Louis team. It's certainly going to be an interesting one. All right, last one in the rest of the story, hitting all the headlines of the day and of the week. Man, I won't lie to you guys. I'm not for a second going to act like I am knowledgeable when it comes to the NHL, when it comes to hockey. I am Chance the Rapper in that SNL skit of "Let's Do That Hockey." That's what I love the vibes. I'm here for the vibes, the fun, the back and forth. These Stanley Cup finals have been crazy because Florida goes first three games, wins them. You think, all right, well, they're not going to sweep, right? Because it just doesn't happen in the Stanley Cup Finals, at least I don't think so. So you're like, all right, probably not going to sweep, but like maybe, you know, gentleman sweep kind of situation like we had in the NBA Finals. But no, the Oilers have now, after last night's win, they've won three straight. They beat the Florida Panthers last night 5-1. They're the third team in NHL history to tie a series at 3-3 after being down in the series 3-0. So you've got the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes, I said 1942. Maybe John Fricke was there, but the rest of us didn't get to watch that game. We're down 3-0. They actually came back and won their series. Then in 1945, the Detroit Red Wings came back and forced a Game 7, but they lost in that Game 7, much like you think of the Miami Heat with the Boston Celtics last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. So an insane series setting up for a Game 7. Greatest thing in sports. We love to watch. They will have that between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. Now, it's also worth reminding, Florida Panthers last year lost in the Stanley Cup Finals 4-1 to Las Vegas. And so it'd be really rough for, I know Maria Martin here in the city, big fan of the Florida Panthers and others, as Atlanta doesn't have a hockey team. And so I know some really heartbroken fans that really don't want to see this thing end up going Edmonton's way, but a crazy series in the Stanley Cup Finals nonetheless. All right, when we get back, Scott Coleman, the host of Hammer Territory Podcast. I'm going to keep messing this thing up throughout this show. He's going to join the show, talk to us about the Braves, and if we can say that whole they're back thing. It's the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you. Going at 6 o'clock this afternoon, evening. I don't know. One of those two. I'm a Dopey Millennial. What do I know? All right. I want to get you guys ready for the 3 o'clock hour. The start of the 3 o'clock hour, an exciting announcement was made this week for the Atlanta Falcons in that, hey, we're going to have two new additions to the Falcons Ring of Honor. All right, two new names, 13 and 14 into the Ring of Honor. We're going to talk about it in the 3 o'clock segment, and I'm going to give you a couple of names, three specifically, that I think could be next. Number 15, who is going to be that number 15 in the Falcons Ring of Honor? I think it's pretty obvious who it should be, but I think it is at least a discussion to be had. So at 3 o'clock, I'm going to give you my three, as well as I'm going to reach out to you. I want you guys to hit me up on Twitter at ATLJohnson18, as well as call us up 404-726-0929 in that 3 o'clock hour as we try to answer who is next for the Falcons Ring of Honor. Now, we've got game two tonight for the Atlanta Braves taking on the Yankees. Given what happened in game one, such a dominant, lopsided 8-1 win for the Braves, you got to feel good heading into this one, as Charlie Morton is going to face off against Marcus Stroman. So guys, definitely towards the end of their careers, just, you know, try a little bit older, I'd have to say. However, when it comes to the big question of, are they back? It's a discussion we're going to have with our next guest. Going to go out to the waitfor.com hotline and bring in Scott Coleman. He's the host of the Hammer Territory podcast, as well as you can follow Scott on social media at ScottColeman55. First off, Scott, how you doing, man?
Hey there, I'm doing really great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. There's so many different places that I feel like I could start with you about this team and just different directions and what we've seen in the last week. But I'd like to start with, where does Jared Kelnick, great leadoff hitter, rank among your surprises for this Braves season?
It would be up there. And it's not as if Kelnick doesn't have the skill or the talent to be a capable leadoff guy. But really, you know, he hadn't shown a lot of consistency batting in the bottom half of the lineup for most of the season. And sometimes you just kind of need a little bit of a shakeup to get things going. And I believe it was a week as of yesterday that Kelnick was moved up to leadoff. And not just against right-handed pitching, which makes sense given the constraints of the current lineup, but he's leading off against lefties as well. And that was something I was a little surprised by, but so far, Kelnick has really given this team a boost at the top. It's been a very pleasant surprise, and he looks comfortable in that leadoff spot. He's been productive, and even when he isn't getting hits, he had a couple of balls last night in Yankee Stadium that could have been out. Two balls that basically went home run distance, 395 feet, that just fell just shy of the warning track. So Kelnick, he's driving the ball. He's not striking out as much. He's working the count. He's been a really pleasant surprise. And, I mean, the way he's going right now, it feels like he's pretty much locked himself into that top spot in the order.
Yeah. Now, Scott, we saw power show back up last night again for the Braves in a place in New York that I imagine I'm not alone. And, you know, we were kind of wondering, all right, this week-long of excitement and really positive games, like, does this continue when they go up to New York? What'd you see specific to last night? And are you kind of willing to lean into the, you know, hey, the Braves are back?
You know, the thing that really caught my eye last night is how aggressive the Braves were. Really, from the opening pitch, first pitch of the game, Kelnick lines a line drive to left for a single. Very next pitch, Ozzie smashes the ball down the left field line for a two-run homer. They were all over Rodon early. Austin Riley, in particular, is just out of his mind right now. He has caught fire. I mean, he's single-handedly capable of carrying an offense for weeks at a time, as we have seen at spurts throughout his whole career. But right now you have Riley going. Matt Olson's power has been terrific lately. Marcell Ozuna has been a top five hitter in the game. And then some of those other guys who were contributing on occasion as well. So it really does feel like as the weather is warming up, across all of Major League Baseball, home runs have gone up over the last couple of weeks as the weather gets warmer. And we know that when the Braves are at their very best, they're putting the ball over the fence and hitting a lot of home runs, hitting for a lot of power. And you just have to hope that that trend continues and they just keep bludgeoning teams the way they did last year.
Scott, I guess, is that really what it's kind of been between this, what, Rays, Tigers, now Yankees series? Like, is that the connecting thread? Is it just warm weather? Have you seen anything else specific to what's led to a week of really, really positive success for this team?
You know, maybe a little bit of both, but to be sure, the approach at the plate has been much better. It felt like whenever they had runners in scoring position during that six-week stretch when the offense was so bad, they were clearly pressing, they were not executing, they were not hitting with runners in scoring position. Now, things even as simple as just a runner on third and less than two outs, they weren't hitting a fly ball to bring that runner in. And it feels like over the last 10 days or so, as the offense has awoken, they have been so much better in clutch situations, opportunities to score. They've been taking advantage of it. So you combine that, I think hitting with runners in scoring position is just something that can kind of come and go over the course of a long season. But as the Braves continue to hit better with runners in scoring position and then hopefully keep the power going as well, it just feels like that they probably learned some things from that stretch of 6 weeks where they were the worst offense in baseball. They went 6 weeks, the Atlanta Braves, the historic Atlanta Braves from a year ago offensively, that set all those records, were dead last in the majors for about 6 weeks in runs scored. And I think while it was certainly frustrating to watch, it just kind of felt like at some point these guys were going to wake up. And based on the last 8 or 9 games now, it looks like they have certainly awoken, and hopefully it keeps going this weekend in New York.
It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson talking with Scott Coleman, host of the Hammer Territory podcast. Scott, with, you know, Adam Duvall still not hitting particularly well, what, batting a .174. Now we've got him making Marcell Ozuna-esque type blunders out in the outfield. How important do you think it is for Alex Anthopoulos to upgrade this outfield at the trade deadline? Is that like number one priority, or do you see something topping above that?
Yeah, I think outfield is probably the most realistic upgrade that Alex is going to be able to make. You know, Orlando Arcia at shortstop, while the defense has been fine, offensively he's been one of the worst hitters in baseball, especially over the last 2 months. But the fact is, if you go and look at teams who are probably going to sell at the trade deadline, very few, if any, have a shortstop to trade. So I'm guessing the Braves are going to ride it out with Orlando, maybe dip into the minor leagues and pull up Nacho Alvarez at some point, who's in Gwinnett. But realistically, we know firsthand in 2021 how easy it is or how attainable it is to upgrade your outfield at the trade deadline. Of course, Alex Anthopoulos added four outfielders in the span of a week, and the rest is history. So I would really be in favor of adding at least one outfielder at the deadline. I think over the next month, you have the benefit of seeing how Duvall performs, see if he wakes up a little bit. Ramon Laureano has been a really nice addition. He had three doubles last night in New York. Sounds like he's made a bit of a swing adjustment as well from his time in Gwinnett. That's only going to help him. And at some point, you're going to get Michael Harris back. But those hamstring injuries, as anybody knows who's followed sports, hamstring injuries can be really tricky. But I do think as that deadline approaches, we're about a month away, month and a week, an outfielder definitely makes sense, especially if it's going to be one who you could potentially platoon with Kelnick or with Duvall, depending on a lefty or a righty matchup.
Scott, kind of bouncing off this idea of the trade deadline, we've seen Spencer Schwellebach now, solid start against Detroit. I'd say the Baltimore start was perfectly fine. What do you see as kind of the plan with Schwellenbach? Is this just like Alex trying to get to the deadline? Is this a longer-term thing? Are we going to see, you know, maybe an Alan Winans, Darius Vines at some point? Like, I guess kind of what do you envision that Alex is going to do with Spencer the rest of the way?
Now, I've been impressed with Schwellenbach. His first start or two was not great, but as you just said, an encouraging start in Baltimore against maybe the best lineup in the majors right now, and then was terrific against Tampa last weekend. So he's shown that he has some real swing and miss stuff to his game. He doesn't walk a whole lot of hitters. He's done a good job of limiting hard contact, and he's done a pretty solid job of working into games. He's thrown six innings in his last two starts, which is so important to save the bullpen. So to me, it feels like Schwellenbach has probably locked himself into the fifth spot in the rotation. We'll see what Alex does. It would be great to add a starter at the deadline. It's going to be a seller's market. If folks want to take a quick peek at the standings for both the American and National League, like 85% of the league is within a couple of games of even a wild card spot. So it's hard to envision there just being this abundance of pitching available come trade deadline time. But I'm sure Alex will do his due diligence and try to add somebody. It may not necessarily be an ace because those players are so hard to come by. But I would imagine that he will try to add a veteran of some kind to stabilize the rotation. And if there is an impact starter out there that the Braves can obtain with their farm system, obviously, we would be all for it, but at least for the next 6 weeks or so until that time comes, I think you roll with Schwellenbach. A.J. Smith-Shawver should be coming back at some point as well. He's been out for a month with the oblique injury. You would assume that he'll come back at some time. Bryce Elder has been better in Gwinnett. I know he's not necessarily a super encouraging name, but he's a guy who can go out there and has shown he can be successful. But it really does feel like right now the Braves are just taking their rotation day by day and just kind of taking things as they come.
All right, Scott, last one for you. Feels like this feel-good story, at least as of late, obviously been Grant Holmes, guy, you know, making it to the majors after 10 seasons in the minors, finally gets his opportunity. And then, I mean, he's been really good in every outing, all three outings that he's had. Still hasn't given up a run or a walk. Do you kind of see Grant's success as kind of a, well, he's not been in very high leverage situations, or do you think because of his success that Snit could possibly see him in some more of those high leverage type situations? Like, does he kind of move up the pecking order just because of how well he's pitched?
Yeah, it's such a great story, isn't it? A guy who stuck around in the minor leagues for a decade, rode those long bus trips, stayed in maybe not the nicest hotels mm-hmm. for a chance to get just a moment to chase his dream and to make the majors. So it's been really great to see. Holmes has been effective. And I think not only has he been effective, but he throws strikes. He's not walking people. I mean, you start walking people out of the bullpen, I feel like there's probably no faster way to get on a manager's bad side than if you start issuing free passes. So for Holmes, I think he's going to be a great sixth or seventh option in the bullpen. And it's not even an indication of him or how he performs, but there's just a lot of talent in this bullpen right now.
Fair enough.
And it's only going to get deeper. A.J. Minter is making a rehab start tonight with the Rome Emperors. So you're going to get A.J. back. You have Pierce Johnson and Joe Jimenez, who have been terrific. Guys like Aaron Bummer and Dylan Lee have done a nice job from the left side. So you can never have too many good relievers, quite obviously. And I think at Holmes, if he can continue to go out there and throw strikes and get outs and not cause any headaches for the coaching staff, he's just going to get more and more opportunity. And who knows, maybe if injuries arise or if something presents itself, maybe he will find himself in close games late.
All right, that is Scott Coleman, host of the Hammer Territory podcast. You can follow Scott on social media at ScottColeman55. Scott, as always, really appreciate you giving us some of your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right, when we get back, it's that discussion I've been waiting for. The Falcons add two to their Ring of Honor this season. Who's going to be next? We'll discuss it next on the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.